You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters. Welcome to the Table Talk podcast. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a TV presenter and writer specializing in food and science. This podcast is all about next generation plant-based proteins. And we have an absolutely fantastic panel, and they're all joining us online during the coronavirus lockdown. So apologies for any cats meowing, any kids screaming, anyone shouting at their wives or husbands to get off the internet, or obviously any toilets flushing. So we have Morten Beck from Meatless Farm.
Hi there.
Henrik Lund from Naturally.
Hello.
And Mark Driscoll from Tasting the Future.
Hi there.
Let's start with you, Mark. Why should we be eating plant-based protein? What are the drivers?
So I think the production and consumption of protein is at the heart of some of the key sustainability, health and nutrition challenges that we confront over the next 10 to 20 years. We know that the food that we produce and consume contributes some 20 to 30% of global greenhouse gas emissions. It's a significant driver of global biodiversity loss. Agriculture in all its forms uses about 70% of all fresh water that we extract. And health, those that are hungry, 820 million around the globe hungry, 1 billion not having enough micronutrients, and a further billion people overweight really mean we confront a twin crisis, a planetary and a human health crisis. And eating more plants in our diets, reducing livestock product consumption, less but better meats, is absolutely at the heart of meeting those challenges.
Pretty convincing stuff, I think. But what's interesting here for me is that this podcast is about the next generation of plant-based proteins. So I guess we've seen the first wave of vegetarian and vegan foods, but things are getting quite exciting with the development of more recent products. Now, Henrik, do you think the market is still growing? I mean, there are lots more companies coming to market to provide these foods, but is the demand still growing?
The demand is growing, but I'm not sure that the demand is growing as fast as the number of new companies who want to be in this sea of producing and selling meat substitutes. It is a race right now. Nearly every week you see a new company who has a new product that is actually looking a little bit backwards, because most of them call their plant-based products something that contains the word meat. Mm. So that's actually also quite funny to me.
And do you find that for us?
Yeah, because something in Naturally, we don't want to call our products something that they're not. So we use a lot of creativity in finding new names. For example, we have a pea protein, a textured pea protein, a product that you can use instead of chicken, and we called it chick-free. And a lot of people find that actually quite amusing that we use our creativity and also our community on the social media to create new names for food of the future. So no doubt about it that the animal protein, the meat consumption will go on decreasing, that's for sure, and it will speed up during the next decades for sure, because consumers of the future, you know, youngsters, millennials, Generation Z, they will for sure consume less meat and more plant-based products.
Okay, so Morten, Henrik was saying that there are lots more companies developing, but that possibly the market hasn't grown enough to support them. What are you finding? Does that mean that
new products and new sources of plant-based protein are becoming more important?
Well, I don't know if there is an oversupply of new companies at the moment. The Meatless Farm was started in 2016, and back then we were more or less the only ones in the UK doing it. So right now I agree with Henrik that we're seeing a whole rainforest of new innovative companies that are popping up that are sort of small and doing different niches within plant-based. And I think that a greater variety to consumers can only drive the category. So our view at the Meatless Farm is to welcome everyone that's coming into the space, because to be honest, the volumes that we need to replace over the next 20 years are so huge that not a handful of companies can do that. You need many, many more. You need only to look at what the actual meat industry and how many players that you have active in that industry for the last 70 years. So there's a lot of replacement to be done, which can't be done by just a handful of big brands.
Yeah. Okay. So let's be really clear about what we're talking here, about the next generation of plant-based proteins. Mark, what is the next generation? And if you the more specific you can be, the better.
Yeah, and I think this is an interesting one. I think there's some really exciting developments that are now starting to come into the market. So there is some emerging novel ingredients. So algal-based proteins, for example, you're starting to see, I think, a few ingredients, the kind of green smoothies, protein bars, powders, various capsules that are including algae-based proteins in these ingredients. They're obviously highly nutritious. I think development is still at a startup phase at the moment, but you're going to see increasing focus and intention on some of those. There's a whole bunch of ingredients, what I would call forgotten or orphan crops. So these aren't necessarily novel plant-based protein ingredients, but across the globe, there are about 70,000 edible plant species. Bizarrely enough, we probably get about, 60% of our calories from just three globally traded commodities, rice, maize, wheat, for example. But actually, there's a host of more resilient crops that could provide food security benefits, livelihood benefits, within emerging economies.
Can you give us some examples of the sort of...
Yeah, so millet, for example, there's more attention and research being focused on millet. So it's a small-seeded, nutrient-rich cereal grain that's actually being kind of cultivated almost from the dawn of agriculture. But actually, over the last, since the Second World War, it's kind of been forgotten by the academic and research communities. It's got long taproots, very drought tolerant, can be grown on marginal lands. They're going to increasingly be impacted by climate change, full of amino acids, essential micronutrients. Amaranth is another Central American plant that comes into play. And you're already seeing a few brands. So Knorr, Unilever, produced a report, I think it was last year, maybe the year before, on 50 forgotten foods. These were listed in some of those, along with things like, cacti and other more unusual plants. So I think there's going to be novel innovation, but I also think we're going to see more attention paid to these, what I would call orphan or forgotten crops.
Okay, so Henrik, are you looking at any of these sort of ancient crops? That I guess we're looking at some teff and things like that.
Yeah, but I have to say that some of the crops that Mark just mentioned, I've never heard about, so it's very interesting. We are a company that are very down to earth, and I mean that in the way that we try to source as locally as possible. That is also one of the reasons that we actually from January this year, are not using soy as a protein in the chilled range that we have in the meat chiller. So we use pea protein, and last year all the pea protein that we used came actually from Danish farmers. And I will have to look.
And why are you avoiding soy?
Why transport soy protein from North America to Denmark when we have small green peas that we can use instead? So we always look at sourcing as local as possible, to look at the sustainability way of things. I have nothing against soy. I think soy is a fantastic plant protein, but we always try to source as local as possible. So and what we actually discovered was that we have developed a texturized pea protein ourselves, and I believe it is the strongest in the world. It has the best bite, the best texture, and actually you have the same bite in the pea protein that we produce as you have in the soy protein. So why go to United States for protein when you have it in your backyard? So that's how we look at it. Then we are in a lot of science projects with Danish universities looking on new types of plant proteins for the future. We're also having talks with the agricultural institutions on trying to get a partnership around what the farmers should grow in their fields. In Denmark, I think it's 77% of the crops that are grown in Denmark are used for feed, and in my mind, I think we should go from feed to food. And actually, I think that cow, pigs, and chickens are really clever animals because actually they are all vegans. When they need protein, they get it from the plants. It's only us humans for 100,000 of years who, when we need protein, we have to take the protein from an animal, and that is taking the long way home instead of the short way. So that is also a bit funny. And I agree with Morten that of course we need much more companies in this segment in the future. The most important thing for our company, Naturli, is actually that if we want mainstream consumers to consume less meat and more sustainable food, it has to work one-to-one. It shouldn't be a sacrifice having a plant-based day saying no to meat or dairy. So that is what we are focusing on. That is one-to-one. Non-compromising food solutions. We use pea protein now. We are also looking into fava beans, very interesting crop as well. And just another thing is that we have a very interesting science project in Denmark right now with the Danish Technical University and actually Carlsberg, where we try to find ways in using their side stream of waste. Alone in Denmark, they have 93,000 tons of spent grains after brewing probably the best beer in the world. But the only thing they remove from the spent grains is sugar. It still has a high content of protein. So together with Carlsberg and DTU, we are looking into how can we use this? Could we make meat substitutes of this side stream? And I think it's high on our agenda these days is side stream innovation. I think it's so interesting.
Now, Morten, we've been talking about sort of the raw ingredient, and that's obviously vastly important to the consumer, what's written on packet. But there are other factors that drive change in the industry as well, I presume. So production methods and packaging, the way that you create texture and taste. What for you is the big part of the next generation of products in terms of non-ingredient factors? Is it production lines?
We look very much at sustainability as well in terms of where do the ingredients come from and how clean food can we produce. And I think one of the big innovations that we're seeing that we didn't see just 3 or 4 years ago is the amount of different ingredient suppliers of various sorts, whether it's coloring or flavoring or emulsifiers or what else you use in vegetarian, vegan food. And we see that there is so many interesting small startups that are popping up with innovative solutions. And I would say for us, that's some of the areas that we're focusing on, trying to clean up our ingredients decks, make the food as tasty, obviously, as possible, because I believe what Henrik says 100% as well, that you need to drive consumers away from meat over into plant-based by making the best analogs you can. That's the whole flexitarian movement that everyone is talking about. And a big part of that is looking into not what you only can do as a company, or whether you use fava beans or chickpeas or peas or soya, but also there's a lot of other components in this in our type of products. And I think as an industry generally, we are fighting a bit with the conception that we produce a processed food, which, by the way, is not true at all. There's nothing more processed in these type of products than it is baking a bread. But obviously, focusing on sustainability and cleanness of tech, I would highlight as improvements for the future that we are looking into.
Yeah. Okay. Mark, Morten mentioned sort of flexitarians. Do you think that the growth of demand from people who aren't necessarily vegan or vegetarian, those consumers who still want to eat meat or something that is an approximation or analog of meat, is that a huge area of untapped opportunity?
Yeah, I think it's actually the flexitarian market that is the biggest opportunity. So those meat eaters that are aware and conscious of the health and environmental impacts of the meat they eat. So there'll be a move, I think, to eat less but better meat. So better meats in terms of more regenerative agricultural farming practices, better animal welfare standards. And I think, there was a survey done, I think, last year where 70% of the UK population, for example, refer to themselves as flexitarian, wanting to kind of reduce meat at least once a week. So I think that the opportunity for product developers is in that market. I think there are some challenges. I think if you speak to meat eaters, and I think it was the University of Bath that surveyed several thousand meat eaters at the beginning of this year, who were keen to reduce levels of meat consumption from a health and a sustainability perspective, but for whatever reason think plant-based proteins are either inconvenient, not easy to access, that kind of links to some of Henrik and Morten's points, are expensive, or are not as tasty as their meat alternatives. So I think more focus needs to go to those three areas of innovation and plant product development.
Okay, so Morten, are there, without you giving away any of your state secrets, what is the innovation that we're seeing in this space now? Are you developing new products or new ways of marketing? What's the exciting area for you?
Yeah, well, I mean, so just to solidify that point that we just talked about with actually the taste profile of this sort of food. I think if we look over to the dairy market and we look at the penetration that the plant-based dairy market has done lately, and about whatever figure you look at, say 15% of all normal dairy is now replaced by plant-based milk. There's been a huge improvement. It used to just be a soya drink, and now there's a lot of interesting, fun brands and great taste, and there's barista coffees and so forth. So there's been a lot of innovation going on, but it's also an innovation that's lasted, say, 10 years, whereas most of the meat analog companies out there, like the Meatless Farm or Naturli, are companies that's been in the market for maybe the last 5 years doing these type of products, but no longer. So we are still a little bit behind the innovation curve. So some of the things that I find really interesting is what will happen over the next 5 years. So we are in a really interesting space at the moment, because there's investor appetite and there's consumer appetite. And those two things put together simply means that companies like mine is has access to capital that we wouldn't have had just a few years ago, which means that we can build our own labs and work with really interesting people and develop tastes and textures that we wouldn't have been able to do simply from a cost point of view just a few years ago. So I get really excited about the opportunity to really move closer to meat in terms of the texture and the bite. And that could be down to the texturized vegetable protein that Henrik mentioned earlier, or in terms of how coloring works, or just developing the flavor profiles with other sort of umami flavors that can be derived from plants. So there's a lot going on from everyone. And the more, I would say, the more action that we're seeing from newcomers, the more the larger companies like the Meatless Farm or Naturli, the more we will have to improve our game as well. So I see this huge push at the moment from below coming and challenging the status quo. I'm pretty sure that Impossible and Beyond in the States are seeing exactly the same with a competition. When we entered the US market last year and started competing with Beyond, they were welcoming that, but they also see that that means they need to improve more. So overall, it's great for the consumer that there is all this money inflow and interest and consumer interest to improve the product. So that's really where it boils down to. Best tasting products.
So, but Henrik, what I'm interested in as somebody who isn't part of this industry is what are the challenges?
The big. I agree completely with Morten, and it's all about innovation. And we can see that there's a, like Morten says, investment appetite out there, and we have to use this to produce the best products that the plant-based category has ever seen, and that we are working with every day, and we strive to all the time increase the quality of our Naturli range. And I also agree when you about the comment around the dairy category, because Naturli is also in the dairy category. Actually, we are like a cross category brand. We are in dairy, in meat, and frozen, and ambient. So we are all over the supermarket. Actually, if you want to go with a plant-based day, you can for sure take me or just the brand in the hand and have a really, really nice time. So I agree around that. I think it is about phases when you want mainstream consumers to change their diet. It is almost like smoking, 10, 15 years back when it was prohibited to smoke in public places, people were going crazy. They didn't think they could survive it, but they did. So mainstream consumers will also change their habits over time. And in 20 years time, it's no longer, it'll be a complete luxury, I think, to digest meat like a sinful luxury. And hopefully from the meat comes from an animal who has had a really, really good life outdoor. But to me, it's about faces, because some of the things that we faced when we launched this product Minced in Denmark back in January 2018 was that people were a little bit harsh about the point that why does it have to look like meat when it's not meat? And I think that's a very interesting question. But it's very obvious that when it looks like something that you're used to work with in your kitchen, it's not that dangerous. So you can try it out. You instantly look at the product and it looks like minced beef, but it's made out of plants, so you can use it for your.
And I guess flexitarians need that more than vegans and
exactly. But to me, and I also think to Morten, our main target group is not vegans and vegetarians. It's mainstream consumers, because that's where the business is. And if we want to move something and do something good for this planet in terms of climate change, we need to embrace the mainstream consumers, because the vegan and vegetarians, they've been there for years and they know how to make their burger patty out of grains and vegetables. So it's mainstream consumers. A lot of Danish consumers, they want to decrease the consumption of meat. They just didn't know how to get started. And we help them with that. So I think it's phases. Right now, all the products looks like what they're not. It looks like meat. And over time, we'll go into phase two, which I believe will be much more clean label. It'll be like whole food. It'll be without methocel, methyl cellulose, and all these binders that we need to use today, because there's no good alternative out there. But in the future, through innovation, we will make even more natural and clean label products. Whole food products is the way forward, and I think we will see a lot of that in the coming 5 years.
Okay. Now, Mark, I think that's really interesting that Henrik's talking about changing the way that these things are put together. Now, I'm interested in the engineering side of this, because as much as technology and ingredients innovation, presumably the actual production line, the tools that put these products together are really important.
And I'm not necessarily an expert in this field, but with a number of protein product developers and manufacturing plants that I engage and work in, I think you're seeing some really interesting innovation and technological developments here. I think one of the challenges with a number of these new plant-based ingredients is production at scale to bring costs down. I think, for example, you're seeing a number of new extrusion technologies. So over the years, the new types of extrusion equipment have been developed with the advent of things like high moisture extrusion technologies, for example, that enables the creation of more fibrous plant-based meat alternatives. I think researchers also kind of exploring whether other technologies and manufacturing methods could improve plant-based and cultivated meat products. I think there's a lot of innovation that's already been touched on around the kind of recreating texture. Creating a satisfying meat-like texture is probably amongst one of the most important opportunities for alternative proteins. And a number of researchers and manufacturers are developing technologies to kind of almost what I call biomimic animal meat using plant ingredients. And others are identifying new ways to mix plant ingredients to create kind of more fibrous textures to their proteins. So there's a number of innovations. It's about, you know, scale, reducing the environmental impact, and ultimately at a scale that is cost comparable with the meat categories they're competing with.
I agree completely, Henrik, here, because like Mark says, it's all about taste and texture if you want to embrace mainstream consumers. And around technology, we are actually in a science project right now where we are looking into the possibility of spinning proteins. Actually, there was a professor calling me and she said, Henrik, do you know, everybody is talking about that we need less plastic in the future. And there's a lot of process equipment out there in the plastic industry where they use this spinning technology for plastic production. So all this equipment, when they don't produce plastic anymore, we could spin proteins. And this is some very, very interesting area, which we are excited about, because the one company, and Morten, you have to prove me wrong here, but the company that can make a 100% plant-based ribeye steak just vegan will have instantly success I think.
Yeah, no, yeah, of course. I actually think that space probably belongs to the cell-based research more than the plant-based, maybe. Going forward.
Not in our project, but it's the same technology.
Generally speaking, of course, creating a plant-based ribeye is the holy grail. But you know, I would assume that there's a lot of volume in minced meat and derivatives of minced meat as well that can be that is fertile ground for research as well. And I think the point you mentioned about spinning, I agree. The fractionation, so the separation of essentially you mill a pea or whatever legume or pea version that you use, you take a dry product and you mill it and then you spin it essentially and you separate starch and protein in order to get a higher protein content. That process has until very recently been a rather chemical process and also high usage of energy. So one of the areas of research that we're looking into and that I find interesting is how to create these proteins in a more sustainable way where you do it clean and you also use less energy and obviously closer to the source of where you're selling. But if I may round up the cell-based, that's obviously, I don't actually know how to look at that from a plant-based company's point of view, whether it's a competition or a replacement. I think what it is it's just basically helping us reduce the environmental impact of animal farming, and particularly of sort of going forward, maybe 10, 15 years into the future of all this cheap meat, because I don't have a problem with the fact that you might want to eat a high quality, sustainably grown piece of meat once in a while. I have a problem with people doing it 7 days a week and going into a cheap supermarket, a discounter, and buying 400 or 500 grams of minced meat for 3 to 4 euros or pounds. It should not be possible to grow a live animal up to a certain age and then slaughter it and pack it and distribute it into a supermarket and then sell it at that price. It's disrespectful to the life that was taken in order to put it there. So I think if we can move into plant-based, can easily take over that part. But moving into the more sort of solid meat, I also think there's a role for cell-based innovation where I think the research is maybe still 10 years, I don't know, 5-10 years away from and I'm sure if Moser Meats or someone else was here on the call, they would argue that it's much shorter development times, which I hope to be right. But that's an area that's very interesting as well and totally ripe for innovation. So essentially growing meat from a little cell into a piece of meat. They struggle with the fat components because fat is essentially a big part of what makes meat taste well. And obviously if you just grow the muscle tissue, you don't end up with any fat and therefore essentially just a tasteless protein. So they still need to, I believe, crack how to do the fat component better. But it's something that I personally find very interesting to follow.
Yeah. Now, Mark, Morten touched on this, which is this concept of cost. You know, and the big question, the simple question is plant-based food more expensive?
They're kind of two interrelated questions. There's no doubt, obviously, over the last 40 or 60 years, the cost of food has dropped significantly. You know, in the post-war era, it was probably 50% of the average weekly take-home pay. It's now, I think, 11 to 12%, but that has come at a huge external social health cost. If you really look at the true cost of food, we're paying for our food three times over. So once in terms of the price we pay at the supermarket checkout, two in the kind of costs in terms of our health system. In the UK alone, we're spending probably £8 billion a year in relation to obesity, cardiovascular diseases, type 2 diabetes as a result of unhealthy foods. And we're paying it in terms of the environmental cost. And if you were to have a level playing field, no plant-based foods are at least price comparable, if not cheaper, than heavily processed foods, meat alternatives. We have an unfair playing field. We haven't mentioned, I think, in this conversation, the role governments play. That's, in my mind, the biggest missing piece of the jigsaw puzzle. We've got lots of investors, we've got new products coming onto to shelves, but governments have historically been wary about telling people what to eat and moving away from a heavily subsidized agricultural system that pumps 50, 60, 70% of public money into supporting livestock industry and nothing into supporting plant-based innovation, alternatives, horticulture sector, the kind of more natural plant-based products. So yes, if you embed true cost accounting into this and government plays its role to re-level a very unfair playing field, then plant-based products are definitely at least cost comparable, if not cheaper, if you reflect all those true costs.
And I agree completely. Subsidy-driven agricultural farming in the meat and dairy industry, it's just the fact that if you removed all these subsidies, I know at least a lot of Danish farmers would have to close, because it's an unhealthy circle that the state is paying a lot of subsidies into the meat and dairy industry. But nevertheless, I would say this, that if you want to embrace, I'm all the time talking about embracing, but if you want to have mainstream consumers as your customers in the plant-based category, it shouldn't be more expensive choosing a plant-based product. And that is what we believe in Naturlis. So in Denmark, and Denmark is in the EU, the country that consume by far the most minced beef in the EU. The minced beef is sold at a very, very low price. You can get a pound for on promotion for €2. So it's very, very cheap. But nevertheless, we sell our product at the same price as the animal alternative, because we believe that is the way forward, is to increase the quality and the texture and the taste of the plant-based products, but sell it at the same price as the conventional animal stuff.
Okay, now just let's shift this away from the cost concept for a second, and I'm interested, really, as from Morten, as somebody who's producing food, what are the pinch points for the plant-based industry? What frustrates you as a producer? What's holding you back? Is it retailers? Is it positioning on shelves? Is it consumer protection, regulation? Is it getting subsidies from the government? What could really set this industry free to thrive?
Well, I mean, as mentioned before, I think government regulation or some tax incentives would be a great start. And who knows, maybe we're moving closer to that actuality at the moment. But we've still been up against the last few years as a very strong meat lobby, which just does exist, and it is real, and it is protected to a certain extent. The meat farming and animal agriculture is protected by political interests. So that is a challenge in itself. The retailers are actually, my experience is they're very open to try this new category and to give us shelf space and to do the right promotional activities. However, it's obviously they also want their retail margins, and they want to make money out of this, and we want to hit the price parity that Henrik is talking about as an industry. Because obviously, if we want mass conversion, we want not the price to be the reason for consumers not to pick animal. I mean, I would believe that going forward, a few years into the future, we could hopefully get to a point where animal products are more expensive than plant-based products because they should be. But this is a challenge at the moment. We are up against 70 years of a very efficient delivery system of animal protein. So it's both a manufacturing point of view. It's an ingredients cost. There's been shortage of texturized vegetable protein in the market as of lately, which where we've seen the kilo price or tonnage price rather of TVP go up significantly, double essentially. So, as you have your ingredients cost going up, and you still have to maintain a product which is at price parity with regular sort of medium priced meat, you are challenged. So that's I think would be the obstacle that I'm seeing.
Okay, and now we should probably draw to a close now. And what I'd like to finish with, I often close these things with saying, what do you see for the future? But I'd like to shift this a little bit and say, what new product, because we're talking about the next generation, can you tell us about a new product that you're excited by that is not your own or not a project that you've worked on yourself, but somebody else's? And that might be a bit of engineering kit, it might be a bit of production line kit, or a bit of technology in the field. But something that you see as exciting for the next generation of plant-based proteins. Mark, what excites you?
Gosh, what a question to finish on. I'm going to point to an ingredient called water lentil or duckweed. It's an ingredient that has come to attention over the last few months. Duckweed is a plant actually that's commonly grown on your garden ponds, but is now being grown in these massive aquifer farms, particularly in the US, maybe in the other parts of the world. But it tastes slightly sweeter than normal lentils. They're highly nutritious, packed with omega-3 fatty acids, micronutrients. They double their biomass every 24 hours. Scientists have just found out they're an important source of potential source of vitamin B12. One of the challenges of plant-based product developers is fairly difficult to access vitamin B12. But apparently, and I know little about the science, they have found it very high in vitamin B12. So it could potentially, it's one of those weak signals that could potentially emerge on the market. I'm sure there's lots of taste and texture issues, but I just want to flag that as a potential opportunity.
Fantastic. That sounds like a really exciting one. Okay, Morten, give us an example of a product that really excites you that is not one of your own.
Yeah, well, I would go a little bit into the detail then and mention I believe it's a Swiss company. I met them about half a year ago, and they have a coloring for plant-based food, which is essentially wrapped in a little. I don't know how to describe it. It's made out of dissolvable algae, and inside is the color. So as you expose the color to heat, it melts, which means that you can get a different type of color throughout your product. So as you normally would have with meat, that it browns on the outside and then it's still red on the inside. And they've developed a coloring that could potentially do that. It's not ready for mass market or for larger volumes that we would require, but it's definitely something I walked away from that and thinking, oh, that's interesting. That's a very good idea.
That's very exciting. Okay, and Henrik, if you can finish off by giving us some...
Yeah. And I would just say my parents, they have eaten a lot of buckwheat porridge. It's very, very healthy. And I think I've eaten a lot of as well. So very interesting. A product that fascinates me, because that is something that going away from animal protein to be only eat plant-based is eggs. And just Tetrick made this product and this company where he sells this bottle with just eggs that you can use to make plant-based scrambled eggs, that's just an amazing product. I don't know if you've tried it. It's made out of the main ingredient is mung bean protein. It looks like scrambled eggs, it tastes like scrambled eggs, and it behaves like scrambled eggs. That's an amazing product. It's the only thing is that it's pretty expensive. But in small doses, only in the weekend, I would say that is an amazing job. And yeah.
Excellent. Okay. Well, let's draw this to a close now. And you've been listening to the Tabletop Podcast with Morten Beck from Meatless Farm, Henrik Lund from Naturally, Mark Driscoll, Tasting the Future, and me, Stefan Gates. And I think this is a subject that we'll come back to again and again. So I look forward to speaking to you all very soon.
You've been listening to the Tabletop Podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, please visit foodmatters.co.uk.